college volleyball weekly. I want to call it week 14, but we kind of skipped there because of the coronavirus pandemic that's currently struck in our society. And I've got here Dan Lewis, head coach at Lewis University, Jay Hossack of George Mason. Thank you again for taking the time, because so much stuff has happened, even though volleyball hasn't really been happening here in the USA, and gosh, for the world for that matter. So a lot of things going on. Before we jump into the main part of our content and our discussions, I want to just finish up with the conference final records and the see who the top teams were in each of the conferences. Then we'll go into our discussion. So Conference Carolinas, Barton took first. They were undefeated in conference play. King second at 7-2. And the MIVA, Lewis Flyers, 6-1 and 15-4 overall. Great season for Dan's team. Lindenwood shocked the MIVA with a 4-2 record, and we're in second place, 11-8 overall. And the EIVA, Penn State, dominant again at 7-0 in conference play, 11-8 overall. Princeton in second, 7-2. And then George Mason finished at 5-3 with a 10-7 overall record, with a roster from Craigslist for the most part due to injuries. And then the MPSF, BYU, undefeated, 6-0 in conference, finished 17-1, lone loss at number two, or the final number two, ranked Hawaii. Grand Canyon snuck up there, got second, 4-2 overall, 14-7 overall, I'm sorry, in overall play. And Big West, which is your guys' favorite conference, first place finisher, UC Santa Barbara, 1-0 in conference, 14-2 overall. Second, UC San Diego, 2-1 in conference, 13-15 overall, with a three-way tie for third place between Long Beach State, Cal State Northridge, and who am I forgetting? And Hawaii, believe it or not.
No, San Diego should be first. They're two wins. They have two wins compared to Santa Barbara's one.
We already got conflict and debate.
Good for you, San Diego. You're number one in my books.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, let's talk about some of the current events in NCAA Division I-II volleyball. Particularly, let's jump over to the NCAA. I just was given some knowledge this morning by Dan here about some NCAA issues that I was not aware about, but they're pretty significant. And both Jay and Dan, why don't you talk about what's happened, what we discovered, and the new news that's happening in the discussion in the NCAA meetings.
Well, what we're talking about is the eligibility waiver stuff. And so basically, on the NCAA Division II landscape, it has already passed legislative matters in terms of granting an extra year of eligibility through a waiver, not only for seniors, but for any athlete. And then the scholarship piece with that is that you can go over your equivalency. So like men's volleyball is 4.5. So next year, you can go over that for just 1 year. So let's kind of break that down into two pieces for Division II right now. So what that means is, like, so next year I've got a senior that wants to come back. It's on that institution to how much they're going to scholarship them in terms of what they want to do with that athlete. And that's for any spring athlete, you know, men's volleyball, baseball, softball, anything across. And then so let's say I've got a sophomore or junior that wants to come back for that fifth year or sixth year, depending on what it is, if they've registered already. They can come back, but that scholarship has to be within your 4.5. So the only year you can go over is next year in terms of that stuff. And so I think you saw that pass on the Division II landscape, basically because on the financial side, they're tuition-driven schools in terms of amount of people. So if their rosters are a little bloated for a year, and they're making some money, and they're certainly probably not going to give full rides to all these kids, the school ends up keeping kids on campus, makes some money, and certainly in this type of turmoil is a good thing. I think you flip over to Division I, who ultimately is having a vote today, and everything that I've heard is that they're leaning away from giving that year of eligibility. And I think it's because of the financial impact. I mean, ultimately, the schools are getting a fraction of what they were going to get from the NCAA with no basketball tournament, so they're not getting as much money or kickback that they typically get, and the investment that it would take to help these kids come back for another year is monumental on institutions, and they won't see as much coming back into them. And Jay maybe can enlighten a little bit more, but that's kind of where we're at. And what does that affect to men's volleyball? The tough part is men's volleyball is a national collegiate sport, so it has Division I and Division II membership, as well as ice hockey and a couple other sports. And so how does that kind of affect the landscape of men's volleyball as a whole and, you know, equity among the teams and things like that? And so, and I don't know, I'm kind of caught in both sides. I'm at a Division II school, but of course I see the other side. And so, but yeah, Jay, I'll let you jump in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you covered a large portion of it. A little bit different on our side, and it also kind of counts differently if you're a private or a public institution. So the vote is actually going on this afternoon, which everybody, like you had mentioned, everybody had thought that the tweet that the NCAA put out a while back, that they were going to allow everybody to come back and it was going to be this big grandiose, you know, hey, we're bigger and better than this whole thing. That actually was never solidified. It was just discussions. And so the challenge that everybody's looking at is obviously financially and then, you know, just logistically, how's it all going to look? So at the moment, what they're talking about is they want to give the seniors their last year go around if they can. There's still discussions on whether or not juniors, sophomores, or freshmen are going to be able to have an extra year because it didn't impact them as much. It may impact a program if maybe you were a guy who has been working for a few years, you were going to go be the guy at your position next year, and then all of a sudden the other guy comes back who was a two-time All-American. Now all of a sudden you're like, well, now I don't get my shot to be the guy. That could all be discussed within each program. But what they're talking about financially is that, it, let's say, for example, a kid is given a half, 50% scholarship to go to his school. Your school can, depending on their financial backing, give up to that same scholarship amount for the next year only. So if you get 50%, your school on their discretion can give you up to 50% for that following year. Now, the rest of the money obviously has to come from the student athlete or through loans or whatever they want to do. But that's how they're looking at it from that standpoint. If you're a private institution, you probably got a pretty big endowment and you might be able to get away with being able to bring up that money a little bit more easy than per se if you were a public institution. Public institutions not only depend upon enrollment, but they also get money from their state governments. Some schools have larger grants given to them where others don't. That's where now the rubber's going to meet the road is, are we going to see equality across the board? Whereas the Penn States of the world can look at it and go, hey, we've got the money. We'll be able to move forward. It's not a question. But then you look at some smaller state schools and all of a sudden they're not able to give that much money. Maybe a Long Beach State or maybe, maybe a UC San Diego for that matter. I'm just throwing out a couple names. I don't know their situation. I'm just throwing out different names. The other thought process is what did your school spend in terms of its yearly budget? So most schools are a zero-sum budget at the end of the year. You have to spend what you're given, and then you move on to the next budgetary cycle. If you only spent a certain amount of your budget money, now you have money left over, so to speak, that you can use for other things. And the universities are looking at that as an option to be able to help offset the balance of what money they're getting from the state. So, for example, if I spent half my budget this year, which is pretty close because I didn't do much traveling, now all of a sudden that money that we didn't spend that was earmarked for this year for the remaining of the season, I might be able to use, per our athletic department and school's discretionary decision, to use that money to help offset and give scholarship money back to the guys that are supposedly wanting to come back next year. So that's kind of where we're at from the Division I standpoint. I think it's going to be interesting to see what the top Division I and what the top Division II programs can do versus everybody else. I don't think there's going to be equality. I think that's going to be a major concern for some people. I think there's some smaller schools that are going to be left in the lurch because they won't have the access to be able to give a kid a certain amount of scholarship money to come back the next year. And so that money's going to come on that kid's own dollar. Where it's going to affect is going to be like places like the Conference Carolinas or lower end Division II programs that really don't have the budgets that the larger Division I, larger Division II programs have. And so you get these kids that are given a lot of money to come play, in some cases, full rides, and now all of a sudden they won't be able to afford that. So I think those schools are going to pay dearly because they're not going to be able to bring back their big players. That's just my take on that whole thing. So that it's an ever-fluid environment. It's going to change probably over the course of the next week or so a little bit differently, and it'll make some adjustments or some changes. But that's where we are right now, at least from the Division I standpoint.
Well, anything else to add, Dan? I mean, you gave us a lot already, but and that's a lot of happenings just in the short time that we haven't been in action, given the unprecedented events.
I think it'll be interesting to see how it kind of unfolds. You know, I think I'm hoping, I don't know. I kind of hope they give the Division I something. I don't know what it needs to look like or something like that, but I hope the NCAA doesn't take it out of the seniors' hands. I think it's the seniors more than anything. And if they choose to come back, great. If they choose not to, then that's okay too. I probably care less about the underclassmen because they do get an opportunity to come back. But, you know, I hope they give the seniors an opportunity to make that decision on their own terms. You know what I mean? So yeah. I read a comment the other day that, hey, that's life. I'm like, well, I get that. And there is no control sometimes over things that happen, which we're all in right now. But I also think that when you do have control sometimes, maybe money doesn't leverage everything when it comes to big sports. You know what I mean? And so maybe there's like, hey, we can look at this a little bit and give some, you know, say in those seniors saying, hey, maybe I do want to come back if I want to spend my money or things like that. You know what I mean? In terms of that. So
that's definitely something to be watching out for in the upcoming, gosh, sounds like days for the most part.
Yeah. So,
and I imagine those are all through teleconferencing at this point, since we're all on lockdown. Well, for the most part, most of us are on lockdown.
I think you'll see a release come out, like Jay said, later this afternoon. It'll come out pretty soon. So about where they're headed. So,
yep.
Crazy, crazy times for sure. One of the things that we knew we were going to discuss once all these things went down is we wanted to recognize some of the top players of the nation, not necessarily our ABCA All-Americans, but some of the names that we came across. And I know there are a lot. So I just kind of wanted to like do a around the horn type thing and just name a player and what captured your guys' attention for their good performances this season. So let's start on my side. Dan, you're the first guy. So we're going to go Dan, the Jay, and then to me.
Kyle McCauley from UC San Diego. So that guy came onto the scene and helped propel that team in certainly a high level of competition and wins. And so he's a guy who I think will certainly be in that All-American, ABC All-American discussion, but certainly a guy that made an impact for his team right out of the JUCO realm onto the floor. Stage of NCAA Division I men's volleyball.
Yep. Jake?
Yeah, Alvaro Jimeno from NJIT, 6'9", outside hitter, junior, plays on the Spanish national team. Big kid, powerful arm, fiery competitor, helped lead NJIT into some national votes this year, which I don't think has happened for quite a long time. So super stoked for that kid. He's done some really nice things there for him.
I'm going to do the homer thing. I know Dan doesn't do the homer thing, but I'm going to do it because Scott Static, senior middle blocker from Waterton, Wisconsin at UC Irvine. I had no idea. He had 19 block assists in the nation, or solo blocks, which is first in the nation. Also had 117 block assists, also first in the nation, and led the nation with 2.03 blocks per set, also first in the nation. So Scott Static was just the wall at the Brent Center this year.
All right. Caleb Jennings from Ball State. Had a really good second year as a sophomore, was one of our top in the conference in kills per game, as well as hitting percentage. And I think you were going to see Ball State continue to kind of have a surge in conference. I think they were sitting at third and had won that Loyola for the first time since 1999 or something like that. but he would be a guy for me.
Angelos Mandalaris from Barton, opposite, senior this year, was a one-man wrecking ball against Loyola from Chicago when we watched him play at our place. Kid was just fearless, would just go out and hit the ball as hard as he could. And, you know, Barton really, really enjoyed having him there for the last few years. We'll see if he comes back next year.
Yeah, I'm going to go with one of Dan's guys on this one, Ryan Coonan. He had a couple error-free performances and hit over 600 a few times, too. And he just was a constant gunner for the Flyers. And their success was dependent on his arm, and he delivered. So he was a fun player to watch this season.
I got two guys next. So I got Casey McGarry and Randy DeWeese, the double duo at Santa Barbara. Do you know what I mean? Casey sent them up. You know, Randy moving into a pin position and those guys had continued to elevate that team to a pretty high level. I was excited to see how those guys were going to finish out and see where they were going to be at. So, I don't know. I think they're both seniors too, right? So, yeah. I don't know. Would those guys come back for another year? Holy, those guys could be pretty formidable. Do you know what I mean in terms of that? And so,
Yeah. All right, I'll get to Brett Wildman, outside hitter for Penn State, 6'4", sophomore, super live arm. Kid is incredibly athletic and is really becoming the go-to guy for Penn State over and over again. He'll be a player to watch not only, you know, during his next couple of years at Penn State, but I think in the future you might see him on the national team and obviously playing professionally overseas. Kid's got a really good arm. My next one, Will Stanley, setter at BYU. Kid ran a fantastic offense, super great leader on the court, really calm, cool, collected when he needed to bring his team down and elevated them when they didn't, when they needed it. And they didn't need that often because they're a pretty fiery team as a whole. But yeah, Will Stanley is my next guy.
Well, I just want to add on the your Will Stanley stats there. He had 10.74 assists per set, which is third in the nation. Team hitting percentage, 371, second in the nation. But those, he was one of my guys, but I'm going to name two other guys. Two background guys, and going to be surprises for you. Gage Worsley, Libro for Hawaii, as well as Colton Cowell. Worsley was just a stabilizing force on defense and on serve receive for the Bows, as well as for Colton Cowell. And I think that because they had Parapunov, they had, you know, other big guns hitting for them, Guillermo Voss in the middle and Gassman. It's like they were overshadowed what Gage and Colton did for the Rainbow Warriors.
All right, is that back on me already?
That is back on you.
All right, well, I got, how about the two outsides for Grand Canyon?
Janky and Gianni.
Janky and Gianni helped elevating that team to some significant wins and certainly competing at a high level across the country. And both, I mean, they're both sophomores, right? Am I correct with that? Yeah, so it's like formidable guys that are going to be, you know, coming up on the next couple of years for sure. So
maybe not the solid performer across the board, but I'm going to give you a one-time exemption. Lou, the libero for Stanford, kid came in as a libero, has never set a match in his life, and the kid leads him to victory. How cool was that? Good for that kid.
Yeah, I'm going to throw down two shockers for you guys as a Big West homer. Long Beach State's Mason Briggs, their libero, and Carlos Rivera, their redshirt junior setter. Briggs, also, although I didn't get to see too much of him, what I did see was he was definitely one of their solid guys on the court that was really keeping second, third balls in play for that team and kept them competitive, especially for a team that lost four major contributors to their back-to-back national championship team. And same goes for Carlos Rivera, played at Newport Harbor. So he's definitely one of the boys I've known for a while, but he stepped in for Josh Tuininga and was able to get this group of guys who still have to prove themselves confident enough to a only one loss season. Last round, Dan, go.
Oh, last round. Raymond Barsimian for Concordia Irvine. So he would be a guy that maybe is a little bit, people don't talk about a ton, but he's put up some pretty good numbers for them. I think, help me out. What was the outside opposite of him sometimes?
Hippie. He switched around a lot.
Right? Yeah. Okay. But I thought Barsimian, those guys had some nice wins for them, and I thought did a nice job. I just wanted to make sure who that was.
All right, Jay?
I'm going to go over to Joe Carlos, setter at Pepperdine. Kid's 6 foot if he's wearing tall shoes. There seems to be a little bit of a battle going on between the tall setters and the short setters. And there's a number of really good shorter setters in the country. We have a couple in our team as well. But it's nice to see guys that are not the tall ones going out there and leading. He was behind Malahi when he first got there and ended up being a starter later on in the year. And then my next one is going to be George Heumann, the absolute opposite end of the spectrum, 7 foot middle opposite outside hitter. He's going to be a kid that I think is going to try to come back next year. He's going to use this to advantage. He's talking to some teams right now. He's in the portal. I know there's some people very interested in having a 7 foot middle on their team. And he's going to make an impact maybe on the national team in the next couple of years. So those are my last two guys.
Well, I'm glad you took
name,
him in.
Hey, that name was Jordan Hoppe. I apologize. Not Will Hippe. Jordan Hoppe. So was the other guys.
Well, I'm going to end on these two. I'm glad you took Heumann because it means I can end on two and not three because I really feel like – This middle was one of the top middles in the nation, but because there's so many, not so many, but there are three middles that are constantly performing with good numbers. Tyler Mitchum for Lewis. He was hitting in double digits and blocking. He's hitting double digits and hitting over 600 a few of your matches. And, you know, seeing him play at UC Irvine and then even against BYU, he was pretty effective. So, you know, I just see that he's going to be an excellent contributor for you next year, Dan. And the other person, Liam Maxwell of Belmont Abbey, senior outside hitter, had 290 kills in the season, 4.53 kills per set, which made him first in the nation. So you definitely got to give him props.
Yeah.
So it was a good rundown of all the guys who we could be seeing on the AVCA All-American list. And I think, Dan, you're going to talk about where they're at in the process for that. Here in the next few days, weeks?
Yeah, so basically I'm kind of a little bit of the time. You know, the guy we didn't mention is Gabby, just so everybody knows.
Oh, well, that was an obvious, though.
Yeah, I know, but we got to give the guy some love. He was one of the best players in the country. Do you know what I mean?
He gets enough love as it is.
And Davide Gardini, we got to mention him, too. So.
So anyway, the timeline, so basically the good thing is that I think almost all the conferences are doing conference accolades, you know, first team, second team, things like that, which is really good. With that going down, it adjusted the timeline a little bit. I think basically you're going to have the All-American announcement come out Tuesday, April 21st, followed by Coach of the Year, Assistant Coach of the Year, and then Player of the Year on April 23rd. So we got a little bit of time before that stuff, but I think like our conference is doing theirs this week. I think the EVA is doing theirs this week as well. And I think that's going to be followed by a couple of the other conferences in terms of that stuff. So it'll be great that we're recognizing these, you know, what, you know, a lot of these guys had, whether it's 2/3 of a season or not, and they had a great year and did some really good things. And so I think that's great that we're doing that.
Well, we are. So you're looking at potentially within the next 2 weeks, and it sounds like at least is that I didn't hear the day. It may have went gone out on my end.
April 21st is the All-American announcement. Yeah. So
now I'm curious on your guys' takes, being coaches and pretty immersed in the game, but there's been chatter on certain boards that there shouldn't be player recognition in a shortened season. What are your guys' thoughts on that kind of a statement?
I'm strongly the other way, and here's why, okay? Because you talk about 2/3 of the season. What about the other 5 months or the other 2.5 years that kid put in? So you just you sit there like, well, it's just a couple months of the season. Well, hey, there's a freshman that's been working 2 years to become a junior who had the opportunity to make an impact this year that we're not going to recognize, and he was having some great numbers and doing some great things. I don't think that's what you should be doing. That's not what we're here to service, the student-athlete, you know, and – we can't control this thing that happened, this huge thing that's in front of us right now, but we certainly can control the fact that I can recognize that kid for the work he's put in for the past couple of years and say, hey, here's a little bit of recognition for you. Do you know what I mean? And that's why I feel so strongly the other way in terms of that. I think when you're trying to name a national championship on a voting poll, that's a whole lot different. When I'm looking at stats and I'm comparing stats here and stats there, you know, I can do a lot better comparison on that than I can just voting on my opinion on what a record is in terms of that.
I couldn't agree 100% more. There's literally no reason why you shouldn't acknowledge the student athletes for the work that they put in. Dan nailed it. Whether it's the 2.5 months of season or it's the 2.5 years of the time you put into the program, all the countless hours that you've gotten up to go work out and strength and condition, all nine yards, and all the academics you had to put up. But there's just no reason why you shouldn't acknowledge the players that stood out up to this point. I mean, could it have changed? Maybe. You know, I know some of these conferences are naming players of the year and freshman of the year. Those could change, but you're not talking about what could be. It's about what they've done so far. And I agree with him. Naming a champion, a national champion, you know, back in the day when football used to do this, it was archaic and it was stupid because there's always an argument and somebody could always tell you, well, what about this win against this team? And what about this win against that team? And everybody had different schedules. Championship should only be named with a match. That's the only way it should happen. How you get to that point can obviously be debated, but I absolutely agree. Let's give the kids the recognition they deserve. Leave the national championship debate for people who want to talk on Volley Talk.
There we go. The gavel has sounded. So, hey, we've gotten all the big serious topics out of the way. We're gonna have fun on our next one here, and this is actually at the suggestion of Jay here, because he's Mr. Good Time. Right? Dan is Mr. Details Magazine and GQ Magazine, so I just trying to usher them in control here. But we're gonna do this thing, and it like PTI or pardon the interruption on ESPN. I'm gonna throw a couple statements down. I'm gonna have our coach's name or state. The first thing that comes to mind when I say the particular topic or sentence.
Okay.
We'll go with Jay first this time because we went to Dan last time and Dan's like, oh, please don't do me first again. So, are you ready?
Yep.
Breakthrough player of the year, Jay.
Kyle McCauley, UC San Diego. Kid came out of nowhere and all of a sudden he's on the national scene as one of the best players in the country. And how nobody else recruited him, I have no idea. I never even knew who this kid was. So,
Travis Turner. Dan.
Liam Maxwell, Belmont Abbey. Leading the country. There you go. Yep. So that guy did a nice job and was really helping that team perform at a high level. So,
all right. Top D2 player.
Who's first?
D2 player? A Division II player team?
Who's first?
Oh, you are. We're going to you. You're first.
Ryan Kurian, without question. Kid 6'9", built like a truck. Touches, I think, 15 feet the last time Dan did a measurement on that guy. He's got a cannon for an arm. You're going to see him play overseas, if I'm not mistaken, in the next couple of years. And he might even be a guy in the national team you might see. Real good player. Top D2 player in my eyes.
Ryan Kurian. How would I not say that? You know what I mean?
I want to put you – I was hoping you'd say TJ Murray just so you can drop his name.
You dropped his name, so we're okay. I don't have to drop his name again. So, Tyler Mitchum. I'm just going to name him. Do you know what I mean? The guy's hitting 505. Actually, who I need to mention is Kyle McCauley. San Diego's still Division II right now. One more year. This was the last year. So, he would be the guy that's up there right now versus Division II athletes. The other guy that we got to make sure we mention is Jay. Is it Mandalaris from Barton?
Mandalaris.
That guy's a force to be reckoned with. You know what I mean? He's a real good player, so certainly impressed with him this year. So,
yeah.
All right. EIVA Player of the Year, Jay.
In my eyes?
Yep.
Alvaro Gimeno. The kid is not only a one-handed warrior that he's just literally going out and dominating teams by himself. He's got some players around him, obviously. Don't get me wrong. But, man, you want to get a kill, they just chuck the ball up to that guy and go, hey, go get us out of trouble. And sure enough, he does it. So he hit 600 against us. And we still beat him. We still beat him. But the kid hit over 600 against us, and we're not a bad blocking team. So that's my call for EIVA Player of the Year.
Wildman. Brett Wildman from Penn State. I don't know his numbers. They're not in front of me. But that guy certainly was helping them propel to a league winning team this year, do you know what I mean, in terms of that. And so, and I think he's still got 2 years left, right, Jay?
Yeah, don't remind me.
Brett Wildman, so yeah.
All right, well, we're on the Conference Players of the Year, Big West Player of the Year.
Jay? I'm going to go with Parapunov, only because he has, he's been a guy that they can lean on a little bit more often than not. And I know he had a bad night his first night against BYU, but came on the next night. And he's been doing that pretty steadily all year long. You can go a few different directions with this one, but I'm going to go with Parapunov as my choice.
All right.
Kyle McCauley, how many times can we say his name in this podcast? So, yeah.
Next one, Miva Player of the Year.
Ryan Kurian, in my eyes, the guy led the charge and helped that team be the juggernaut that they are. And so he gets my vote for Miva Player of the Year.
Can I vote? This is the one format where I get to vote for my own guy, Ryan Kurian.
Yep.
So TJ Murray.
TJ! He's probably watching nice. Right now, just so you know.
Nice.
All right. Carolina's player of the year?
Conference Carolinas. Obviously, Angelos Mandalaris. That kid is the player of the year without question in the Conference Carolinas, if you ask me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Angel. He for sure would be the guy. So,
all right. Favorite independent team mascot?
Is it the rail splitters?
See, we both said it. Yeah, it's a rail splitter.
Rail splitters. How cool is that name?
And I thought you would have gone with Urbana Blue Knights, but.
My favorite independent player, Evan Corey, from those guys from Lincoln Memorial. That guy's a stud. The guy can play beach too. Really, really good player. So
nice.
Yeah, I'll just add on that he likes a nickname I gave him, the Bayou Bomber or the Cajun Crusher.
Oh, wow.
So he's a New Orleans kid.
Yeah. Those are great WWF names.
All right. How about this one? Surprising Performer of the Year.
Surprising Performer of the Year. No. Listen, I know where you're going, Dan. I know where you're going. I'm just going to go Surprising Performance of the Year. Okay. I'm going to go with Lou, the libero for Stanford. It set his team to a victory he's never set before. Come on. How do you not give that kid for the best single performance of the year?
You can't go away from that. It's pretty impressive. Do you know what I mean? So we got to see him play as a libero as well. Do you know what I mean? The kid's pretty good. So,
all right. I don't know how this is going to go in the coaching circle. So if you want to pass, you can. Underachieving team of the year.
USC. I thought that they had some pretty nice pieces. They didn't have a lot of upperclassmen, but they had a good amount that could have led that team. And I think USC came out this season and didn't look well prepared. And I don't mean that because the coaching staff didn't do the job, but I think the players themselves maybe thought that they were going to do a little better just because of who they were. So I think USC is probably the underperforming team of the year in my eyes.
All right.
I agree with him on the USC. I think the one that people wouldn't have known about but coaches might have been would have been Loyola. But they didn't know that their setter was out until the season started. And then when everybody saw the setter was out, they're like, oh, we get it. You know what I mean? So, but I thought they were getting better for sure. But I think in the beginning, that probably caught everybody off guard when Zolig wasn't playing for those guys. And so.
That's a major piece to miss out on. Garrett Zolig was so solid for USA in the summer.
Yeah.
I got to see him play in the Norseca Continental Championships. I was like, whoa, this kid's great.
Yeah, it was a pretty big piece for them to hit. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right, best Libro.
it's not Lou, actually, from Stanford. Best libero is Gage Worsley, University of Hawaii. Just a fearless competitor. The kid is built like a truck. If you ever stand next to him, he's maybe 5'11" tall, but he's about 4 feet wide because the kid is just jacked. And he's fearless. He absolutely fears nobody. I've seen him stand in front of international bombers with a helmet on and just go and bring it on. So that's my kid for libero of the year.
Well, I can't go away from that. So Gage would be number one. Mason Briggs might be number two. He's a guy from Long Beach. He's pretty darn good. You know what I mean? And so, I don't know where his numbers are sitting at all, but certainly he's right up there with the top liberos. So
let's go to the last recognized guys. Best setter.
I think Will Stanley probably gets my nod. I just think he ran a really good offense. I thought his leadership on the court was really solid and steady, and he was a guy that his teammates could look to when things got a little sketchy, and, you know, he just led him to victory, and he's just got a real nice tempo, and, yeah, that's my leader right there.
Casey from Santa Barbara, he was pretty good for those guys. You know what I mean? He would be the guy that would be right up there with Will, I think, in terms of what he was doing offensively for those guys.
Another 6-foot setter, by the way.
Yeah.
So. All right, to the best oppo. This is a little tougher, I think.
Mandalaris is a guy that comes to mind, and obviously Gabby comes to mind. If I'm going to pick one of those two that I want on my team, I'm going to go with Gabby, only because he's just he's a next level kind of guy. Mandalaris is good, and I think he's going to be good in the professional leagues when he goes home. But Gabby's just a whole another level. So I got to go with Gabby.
It's interesting. You got Rado, Gabby, and Mandalares, and none of them are American born. I mean, ultimately, Gabby's Puerto Rican, but I think your three best in that position right there are all guys that are foreign guys, you know what I mean, in terms of that. And so, but I lean towards Gabby right now. Gabby opens up the game when he serves, you know what I mean, which is pretty, pretty tough.
Yep.
No, I thought this one through. This is another tough one. Best middle in the nation, because it was kind of a shocker position of the year. I didn't think there were going to be that many great middles, but I saw a lot of great middle performances in this short season.
What did you say?
I would say Tyler Mitchum or Scott Static. Those would be my two. Just depends on if you want offense or defense. Do you know what I mean in terms of that?
God, there's so many good middles for different reasons. Kofi comes to mind at UCLA. He'd probably be a guy that I would pick, and I would keep him in the middle. I necessarily would not put him as a multi-position hitter. I would let him stay in the middle and let the guys around him work. And I'm going to go with George Heumann at Princeton. I mean, the kid's 7 foot tall. He doesn't have to fully commit to be able to slow anybody down, and that allows him to stay on the ground and be, you know, pin-to-pin movement really quickly. So those are the two that I would pick.
All right. And then here's the question that's going to put you guys on the spot. What two teams would you have playing in the NCAA final if you were playing?
Today?
Yep.
I know who I'd want to see, only because I think it would be fun, and that would be Santa Barbara and BYU. But I think Hawaii and BYU were the two top teams consistently night in and night out that seemed to be the ones that could perform at the highest level no matter the night. So, I loved watching Santa Barbara play. They were so much fun. They were so scrappy. They were small. And they just played a phenomenal style of volleyball. So those are my three favorite teams. How's that?
Way to dodge the bullet.
Yeah.
So I got two answers. One answer is if whoever was first and second seeded, they're going to be playing in the finals. So that's BYU and Hawaii, because they don't have to play the extra match on the play-in on Tuesday. So they get that bye off, and so their legs are a little fresher when they play on Saturday. And I just certainly would be your kind of matchup final, whoever got those seeds. What I would have liked to see, well, Lewis gets in. They beat the first-round opponent on Tuesday. They beat Hawaii on Thursday, and they beat BYU on Saturday. That's what I wanted.
I like that answer.
There you go.
What are the odds? I want in on the odds.
Well, there's no doubt that the season shaped up to be an entertaining one. And honestly, that Final Four would have been incredible. Even the entire NCAA tournament would have been great to watch with the way the play was shaping up this year. Yeah, great calls by you guys. And gosh, I'm hoping that we can be back again for next season. Or actually, we could do another one once we do get a final of the ABCA All-American teams.
So I think that's another wrap-up. I think that'd be good. Just at the end when all that stuff comes out, maybe in two or three weeks. So,
yep. 3 weeks. So we can start developing our arguments why people didn't get on. Wait, but we got to end with this question. Who was the best dress coach of the year?
I'm going to go with Kevin Birch. Birch. I'm going to go with Kevin Birch.
Nice. It's a good one. I thought I kind of dressed down a little bit this year. I was a little more relaxed. So I can't put myself in that category. So,
plus, you had the shiner for a couple weeks, too. So that kind of took away from your best dressed and best looking.
Yeah, I didn't see a few coaches all the time. So, I mean, I just have to go with the ones I saw. So maybe Jeff Nygaard. How about that? You know what I mean? So I'm just going to throw that out there for you. So,
all right. Hey, again, this is College Volleyball Weekly, and this is week semi-14, I guess, with our shortened season. That's Dan Friend from Lewis University, Jay Hossick from George Mason. Always a pleasure and always such a great time to chat with you guys about the sport we love, which is men's volleyball. So I'm looking forward to connecting with you guys again in 3 weeks' time. Is that what it is, the timeline is?
Yeah, April 1st, so maybe after that, yep.
Sounds good. All right, gentlemen, thank you again.
All right, thanks. Yeah.